Thank you. Herbert, I'm Dan, an alcoholic.
Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Oh, good, good. You know, the first thing I did when, as he was talking, for some reason, I was thinking that, well, tonight, 6 and 7 was going to be really short, and I would really like a long, like, drawn-out beginning of the meeting, and this was the fastest one we've had since I've been on it, getting to the speaker. So I guess whatever his plan was he was going to make sure that I got the opportunity to, you know, as I was sitting here, I asked God to, you know, to guide me, and which, as you'll hear, took a long time in his fellowship for that to happen. As I talked about last week, I think, you know, about the fact that I did my 4th and 5th step with my sponsor, and to be honest, that I during that first 4th and 5th step with my sponsor, when he came over to my house, that, like I always said, the lovely trailer below the landfill, and he came that day for that hour and a half. I gave him the least amount as possible because I still did not trust people that well, and I did not have a higher power that I in my life at all, and. With that, I'm going to tell you right now, if you've done a 4th, 4th, and 5th step, your first 6 and 7 step or your 6 and 7 step is not going to be wonderful. I can, you know, the first thing I did, you know, I was laughing at myself because, you know, I am so glad. I went and I wrote down a list of character defects. And I am so glad when I came in the program that you guys did not tell me about this long list of character defects. Because if I did, I don't think I would have come back. Let's see, I got resentment, anger, fear, self-pity, self-justification, self-importance, self-condemnation, lying, evasiveness, dishonesty, impatience, hate, false pride, jealousy, envy, procrastination, insincerity, negativity, dishonesty, laziness, immoral thinking, perfectionism, intolerance, criticizing, and greed. Wow. Man, that's just, and I guarantee if we sat down, the rest of this crew could find even an added part of that list. And of course, I'm a numbers guy. I'm a statistical guy. I believe now there might be 2 out of that group that I didn't have. You know, that's not really good. That's not saying much. And in the book, when you read about the 6 and 7 step, one of the things that they say is the fact that, you know, we can try only an alcoholic when he doesn't have like 100% of that when he comes in, like, will say, see, I wasn't that bad. You know, I mean, I might have been 98%. And I'm like, I'm rationalizing why, okay, well, I wasn't 100%. So I don't have to really work on that. And I can remember my sponsor telling me, you know, like, hey, you know, we're going to get to 6 and 7 done. And I don't really know what happened during that period of my life other than the fact that I started back to school. I had my second kid. I was running around like a crazy man. I started back to college full time and working part time with my father-in-law. And you know, not having a higher power when it says, like, you know, we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I can remember sitting down with my sponsor and him saying that. And the first thought that came to my mind is, I'm not going to talk to God about that. I'm not going to talk to God about that. Because, see, I'm still at the point in my life where I want to be the one that fixes all these character defects that I wrote down. I want to be, because, you know, that's how you get the pats in the back. That's how you get the parade. You don't get the parade if God does it. At least that's what I thought. And so what I did is, you know, yeah, did I go to him that day? Yes, I'll ask God to help me remove these, you know. Yes, I did say that. In my heart, my soul, I wasn't capable of saying that. Or at least doing it, which is all right. That's one thing nice about this program is progress, not perfection. Because if it was perfection, I think day 2 they would have kicked me out because they would have said, no, this guy's not going to really work it. But I'm also a believer that this program and how we work the steps is God's plan. And God knew when he was going to do each thing. See, some people can get a book and get a piece of paper and they can make that contact because they have it. Some people have to be beaten down more. And you can be beaten down, even though, you know, after you do the fourth step, you can still be beaten down. You can be doing the next right thing. I'm going to tell you right now, I was a better husband after doing that fourth and fifth step. I was a better father, you know. I wasn't leaving my kids alone before I had to go out and find alcohol. You know, I was doing the next right thing. I was being, you know, trying to be nice to my in-laws. I was going back to school. I was going to classes. I was doing all these things. So on the outside, my sixth and seventh step, if you saw me, you'd say, oh, man, he's got it together. But I'm going to tell you right now, you know, smoke and mirrors works for a period of time. And that's what I was using. And here's the crazy part about it. I thought I was smoke and mirroring you. I was smoke and mirroring me. That's the truth. I didn't know that then. I thought that I was fooling everybody else and the only person that was being fooled was myself. You know, so I had to have a couple of events that started waking me up a little bit. Because, you know, when you're going back here, I remember I graduated from college and during a period of time, I had those some things that happened that were awakenings, you know. I talked about last week where I did my second, fourth, and fifth step. And I did it with four guys, 4 years in this fellowship from Oil City and Franklin that I had never seen before. And I dumped it on these guys and felt free for the first time. You know, didn't really understand that. You know, the other thing that happened is I'm still, even with that freedom, I'm still not making that connection with my higher power. I'm still thinking, man, I am still doing all this myself. This is tremendous. I went to school. I graduated, you know, a kid from my hometown where I grew up and a kid that had gone through the things I'd gone through as a kid should not, you know, do as well as I'm doing. Yes, I believe this program's helping me. I believe my sponsors helped me. I'm believing that the old timers that my sponsor had heard me were helping me. But I still felt that I was the one who was going to be the guy that got all the glory. And so that now I get my first teaching job. I'm feeling good about myself. I get my first coaching job in Erie, and oh man, I've arrived. You know, I've got a family, wife and three kids. I've got a coaching job, but see, that six and seven step was done at such a low level. And it's waiting, those little character defects that I've been holding down by basically being so busy and so focused that I didn't really see them but I'm gonna tell you right now, I didn't see them. Everybody else saw them. Everybody else felt them. You know, the pain that I was doing to people that I didn't even know I was doing. So now I get my first coaching job and I'm coaching, you know, and I think I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I'm thinking that because what the six and seven does to me, it's that foundation steps. It's the steps that where by getting God in our life, when things happen to us, we don't wash away. We're starting to feel good about ourselves. But see, I think I'm there, but I'm not. And God knows I'm not, and he's looking down going, he's not getting it. We got to turn this up a notch. You know, we're going to turn this up a notch and see what this does. And the first thing he did was, I was coaching a game, and the team I was coaching was really improving as the year was going. We, you know, of course, all me, self, you know. And I can remember we were playing the one of the best teams in the league. It was going to go on to be in the States at the end of the year, and we're playing this team, and we're not supposed to beat them. And we beat them that day. And, oh, man, honestly, I am feeling so good about myself. I've arrived, you know. This is the beginning of this great journey. And what happened was I get home that day, and my wife sat in the stands, and she sat beside a parent who didn't know she was my wife. And he badmouthed me the entire game. And I came home. I said, "Oh my God, honey, everybody's just so excited. The parents are loving it. They're on board." And my wife goes, "Not everybody." And she tells me, it was a Sunday night, and she tells me about it, this parent. So I do what all sober guys with like 5 years, 5.5 years of sobriety do. I pull out the book that the kid wrote his address on like 3 months earlier, 2 months earlier, because now I'm driving over his house to kick his ass. Because nobody talks about the Great Dan that way. So I do that. I drive over his house. And I beat on the door. Because see, where I come from, I'm not allowed to whoop his butt in his house, which is against the rules in Ridgeway, where I'm from. I had to drag him outside in the street and whoop him from his neighbors. That's my thought. That's how fast my mind goes back. Because I don't have a foundation. I don't have 6 and 7 that I've done that made me feel. And so I beat on the door. And guess what? This little old lady answers the door. I said, "Excuse me, ma'am. I need to see such and such right now." She says, "I don't know who you're talking about." I go, "Oh, yeah, you do. I got it right here. It's the address." And she's like, "Sir, I don't know who you're talking about." And I keep on going. And I can see that there's a look in her face of fear. And I can see that she's going to maybe call the cops. But I get back in my car. I drive home. I get to the house. I open up the telephone book. 2 months earlier, that basketball player wrote down his wrong address. I knew at that moment. I called my sponsor up. You know what he said? "Get your ass over here. Get your ass over here now." And I got in the car, drove over, and we started talking. He goes, "What are you doing? Why, you're back to where you were. You may not be drinking. You know, how you did it? Say, "Oh, yeah, I'm good. I know I've done the 6 and 7. I haven't done the 6 and 7 where I asked God. I've asked Dan. The world according to Dan. And you can see what it's doing." Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I pulled everything back in. I tried to work this stuff better, but it just keeps on going. I'm not figuring this out. I mean, all these character defects that are underneath me, like I said before, the cicadas that are underneath the ground waiting for those moments, they're still under there. I might have pushed them down a little bit. I might have smoked a mirror myself again, but I can't change, you know, it's right there. Until I say, ask God to remove these defects of character. I humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. Both of them, it's God. And because I don't feel that connection, even though I have a higher power now, I mean, at 4.5 years, I found a higher power. But for some reason, even when I find that spiritual relation that I have with the people now, I can't let go of everything. I can't let go of all these things that are still down inside me frying, you know? So I have to have another moment. You know, maybe I started doing some better things again. Maybe I kept on going on. I was back in grad school. I'm busy here. I'm keeping it under control. I'm looking pretty good. You know, if you were watching me from a distance, you'd say, "Well, he's not a bad guy. He had a few times where he might go off the top a little bit, but he's not that bad of a guy." But that's not what my family saw. That's not what my close friends might have saw or knew about me. And that's what I wanted you to think. So I got to continue on this journey of being a husband and a father, a teacher, a counselor. Oh, yeah. But guess what? Down inside, that all these things are still just boiling up in there. So I have to have that final moment. And the final moment was probably, and some of you have heard the story. I call it my National Lampoon family vacation. And I mean, it was a beautiful family vacation because see, the egotist, the self-centered person was going to plan the greatest trip for his family was ever seen on the planet Earth. I bought a conversion van. I planned the camping. The different things we were doing up through the Adirondacks into New Hampshire. Oh my God, it was going to be the greatest trip. I was waiting for that moment. You know the moment when they all look at you and say, "You're the greatest husband in the world. You're the greatest father in the world." And I'm like, "Oh, I can't wait for that moment." You know it didn't happen. You know, because see, the problem was, you know, as I'm driving through this, they're not enjoying it. They're not telling me that. So here I am now 10 years in sobriety, and I'm a crazy man on a trip with his family. I always say the only thing that saved those little kids was the fact in the conversion van, you can't reach them, okay? That's the only thing that saved them. I'm driving somewhere in Connecticut, I think, in the middle of nowhere, and they're crying and they're screaming, and oh my God, it's torture. And I finally said, that's it. I can't, I don't know really why they don't want to go caving. I don't understand that. How could you not want to go caving? Or you know, all the things I planned. I can't believe you guys are doing this. And finally I said, that's it. It's a 4-lane highway. I don't pull off to the side of the road. I pull into the median. I pull into the median of the highway. I get out, I leave my family in the car. That's what all guys with 10 years of sobriety should do. And I'm walking down a meeting, going to leave them alone, leave them, hell with them, they don't care about me. When I dropped to my knees in the middle of the median, and I looked up to God and I said, God, I need help right now. I'm going to tell you right now, he's quick. He is really quick. See, he was waiting for that moment in 6 and 7 where I said, I need help. He was waiting for that moment for 9 years of my life, waiting for that moment where I'd say, I need help, and meant it, not just words. He's heard my words before. He needed to see it. And guess what? I'm sitting there, and I feel this change instantly. I look up at God, and I felt it. As I was getting walking back, see, he also knows me. As I was walking back, this little voice said to me, whatever they want to do, enjoy it. Because he knows. I'm like, okay, I'll do what they want to do, but I'll make it miserable for them. That's the alcoholic. I'm going to tell you right now, what happened that day, what happened in 6 and 7, is when I became part of my family. I didn't need to be the superstar. I didn't need to be the low part of the person. I didn't need to be the high person. I needed to be part of that family. And when I did that, I became part of my family. That trip, when I asked them, hey, what do you guys want to do? We did it. It turned out to be the greatest family vacation because I got to that point in my life and I accepted it. What if I continued to walk down the road? What if I continued to just left my family there and gone? That could have happened. But at that moment, I finally surrendered to step 6 and 7. And when that happened, that's when it changed my life. I can have everything out of the book. I can hear all these words that are out there. It isn't till I feel that moment that it has a true thing that's going to change me and allow me to continue on. Even though the first time when after I did 5 and 6 or 6 and 7, a couple weeks after I did 4 and 5 the first time, I did 8 and 9. I did 10, 11, and 12. I'm going to tell you right now, it didn't have the same meaning. When I went back over that, when I went back over those things and continued on God's plan of when I was going to see, I could look up at God and say, what the hell? 10 years for me to get to 6 and 7? Are you kidding me? You know what I said? Thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you for giving it to me at the right time of my life. Given to me before, I don't understand it. It doesn't mean anything to me. So I hope that what you heard today helps you. And if you have any questions, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Took me a minute there to find my microphone. So now is the point where we open this up for any questions that anybody would like to ask Dan. So if you have a question, please feel free to go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi, Jim, alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Dan, thanks, man. That was awesome. I just love it when you talk, you know. You're passionate. You're passionate about everything that you do in your life. You're passionate about AA. It's awesome. But so kind of what I got out of this Do you think it took 10 years to get 6 and 7 because you didn't do a searching and fearless moral inventory in 4 and 5?
I think it took it because I didn't feel like I had, you know, I did 6 and 7. I did enough in, you know, like I talked about doing enough in 4 and 5 the first time that allowed me to last the 4.5 years until the moment where I did God's 4th and 5th step. You know, I think that I had to do the first 4th and 5th. I had to do that first 6 and 7 where I was trying to do the things that were in 6 and 7, read the things, did the work, but it didn't, it wasn't the same effect. And until I had it in God's 6 and 7, you know, God's 6 and 7 for me. But if I don't do that first one, I don't make it to God's. You know, if I don't do the deal, at least in my belief, yeah, I had to do that first 4th and 5th with my sponsor. Even though I half-assed it, I gave him enough that I could survive until the moment he's like, okay. Here's your moment, you know, and the difference is, and this is my belief as far as my higher power and my relationship, just because that God has that moment there for me, doesn't mean I take it, you know, doesn't mean I take it. You know, I believe that he gave us the opportunity. That's what he did for us. He's given us the opportunity to choose, and staying sober and not picking up a first drink gives me the opportunity. Working 6 and 7 the first time where maybe it wasn't like with that feeling, that connection with God, but I was still trying to do the next right thing. I was still trying to be, you know, a nicer person to other people, caring, you know, what do you need? What do you need? I was still doing those things. I just didn't understand why. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
Who else has a question for Dan?
I do. Hi, everybody. Jack, alcoholic.
Dan, hi, Jack.
Thanks for a great presentation of 6 and 7. So I guess my question is, when you're working with someone else, what are some of the things that you do or try to do with your guys to help them work 6 and 7?
Thanks. Yeah, exactly. I tell you what, after going through, you know, both sides of 6 and 7, it kind of makes it really a lot nicer because I can understand when they're being me, you know, you know it. You're like, oh yeah, you know, I can, you know, I always, every once in a while, I'm thinking to myself, I need to, you know, when one of my sponsors is telling me something about it, 6 and 7, that they're, you know, and I'm looking for my waiters. You know, because it's getting a little deep in here, and I get the difference is that I can like, okay. And what I like to do is I'm like, well, you know, so how do you really feel about that? Let's not talk about all the character defects. Let's just talk about this one here. Because see, sometimes what has to happen when you're working with a sponsee is that sometimes we can overwhelm somebody. But it's kind of like if I can get you to understand that one, that feeling, that emotion, the things that are there, that foundation that you're going to lay by this connection here and getting through this one part of it. It seems like, you ever notice that when you open up the first one, they all come, you know, sometimes but if you go after all of them, you don't end up there. And so that's what I have to do sometimes, is I'll step back and realizing that that person's being overwhelmed, and I'll open up one of them for him, or I'll talk about what I've talked to you about. And it's amazing to me that when I share the truth about my life, about the things that are inside me, the things that have gone on, how when after I do that, they seem to share theirs. And so that's how it works for me. Thanks.
Who's next?
Jerome, hello? Can you get me?
Hey, Jerome.
Hi, Jerome.
Yeah, Dan, in the 12 and 12, it talks about being entirely ready. When you were on that medium where you probably didn't know you were entirely ready, but you became entirely ready. Is that what happened?
I really think so. I mean, and I think it, you know, we're if you're living in the moment, even when you don't feel like you're with at the time, I didn't feel like God's presence in my life. I felt that I gave everything I could give, that I was doing everything I could do. And as long as I felt that way, I was entirely ready to do what I was capable of doing. I mean, I don't believe that anybody's entirely ready to do something that, as a child, I always tell this story because it really, there's one thing about me from the time I was a kid, because I was passed around in like five families in three states by the time I was 7 years old and went through a lot of really complicated, horrific things that went on. I can remember my brother, I was about three and a half years older than me, and his friends, and now you all can understand this, especially when you deal with guys, if they wanted me to say something and agree to something they wanted me to say, they would hold me on the ground and tickle me and just keep tickling me. You guys remember some of these things? Yeah. And they would do this trying to get me to agree to what they were saying until they finally just got tired of doing it. And they said, he will never give in to us. And they would let me go. And that's kind of like, I think how I felt sometimes in this. And I, you could torture me. You could do anything you wanted to me as an individual. I wouldn't understand it. I wouldn't give into it until my heart and soul was ready to do it. I believe that God had a plan for me. And, you know, like someone said, I every once in a while, I like to look up and go, you know, I could have really used that a little earlier. But the fact is, I'm grateful that he didn't do it any earlier, because I feel like it's what's laid this foundation that's kept me loving this fellowship, being part of you people. I mean, the feelings I have when I hear you guys talk, I mean, those things don't occur if each of these moments doesn't happen. And I have this, you know, this opening in my life. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks a lot.
Who's next?
Beautiful outside.
Hi, Dan. This is Debbie, alcoholic.
Hi, Debbie.
You really had a fantastic presentation, and I always love to hear what you have to say. But if I understand you correctly, are you saying that you knew you had all these character defects and you were working on, you were working on trying to get rid of certain ones, like you became a better father, you became a better husband, and you were nice to people and this and that. But deep down, you had other hidden character defects that you just didn't want to face or was afraid to get rid of. I'm trying to get, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think that's common with everybody. I like this. I can remember I came up with this great idea, because, of course, you know, needing people to say wonderful things or do or I was working on things. I remember I was really struggling with a lot of anger. It was coming out, and it was coming out often. It was affecting my marriage. And so I made a decision. It's kind of like the Chinese New Year or whatever it calls. I call it the year of anger. I was going to work on my anger all year. I was going to do everything, read books, do all these different things. Man, I did a lot. I'm going to tell you right now, at the end, I was more angry. Because, see, I can't do it. It tells me in 6 and 7 I can't do it. But until I'm broken down and you know, and like you've heard before, it's Monty Python in search of the Holy Grail. I'm the guy at the bridge. You know, you cut my arm off. You don't know. You cut my other arm off. No, you don't know. Cut off my other leg. You don't know. Cut off both legs. I no arms, no legs. And he said, "Are you done?" I'm like, "Well, how do we call it a tie?" That's where I am. That's what I'm capable of. That I will fight to the end to be the guy. And it isn't until I get to that moment when I finally surrender. When I was down on my hands and knees in the middle of Connecticut, that moment, I knew that I gave everything over to God on that. That all those character defects that I couldn't do myself. And I'm going to tell you right now, I became a different person. I like to believe I became the person that God wanted me to become. And he had, does that mean it stopped there? Absolutely not. You know, I'm going to tell you right now, if you're new in this fellowship or if you've been around for a while, you're going to get to different periods of your sobriety where every once in a while you're going to say, "Oh my God, if this is as good as it gets, that's good enough. I'm good." And God looks down and goes, "Oh, no, 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 no. I got some plans for you." And he rips another layer off. It doesn't matter at 10 years, 15, 20, 25, 30 years. He's still ripping layers off me. He rips a layer off and he says, "Hey, I got plans for you to not only just be part of the program and part of this and part of that. I want you to be this person everywhere. I want you to be this person to all people you come in contact with." And because he did that, that's the reason I feel the way I do today. It allows me to, wherever I go, I feel like I'm right where I belong. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Who else has a question for Dan?
I do. Hi, everyone. I'm Leslie, alcoholic. And Dan, I want to thank you for your for telling your experience with step 6 and 7 and what finally happened. And I was struck by, I mean, aside from your family who had obviously been in pain, you had to be also. And, you know, what about that? I mean, did having a drink ever enter your mind? Did, you know, I don't know, because to carry that stuff to me, what I was feeling was that was hurt and upset and a man who didn't want to be feeling the way he was feeling and couldn't figure out how to let it go. Can you talk about that, please?
Sure, absolutely. And I can't lie. Did my anger? Did my things like this? I can remember getting into a car and driving and like a crazy man down the road here because I was so angry with my family because I couldn't even though as it's coming out of my mouth. Even though the things are coming out of my mouth, I know what I'm saying is wrong, but I can't stop it. Mm-hmm. You know, at least this program said to me as it was coming out of my mouth in my head, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this? What are you doing? What are you trying to do?" And I get in my car and I'm driving down the road like a crazy man. And I'm like, "This is not the way I want to live. I don't want to start this all over again." You know, I know that even though I didn't have that true connection and hadn't done that yet, that God was still putting enough in me. He wasn't giving up on me. You know, it isn't until each moment that I understand. You know, when they say it was a miracle, I never saw any of the miracles until the first one happened. Then you look back and you go, "Wow, there's 1,000 miracles in my life that already happened. I never saw them." Mm-hmm. That's what happened. Mm-hmm. Even before I had that moment, He had moments where he reached down. You know, I have some, you know, like I said, I've always been a little hyper, a little wild, a little, that's who I am. And Gene Akery told me I was allowed to be, so I'm good to go. He said, "You can be hyper, Dan." And I guess what, 35 years later from that moment, I'm still hyper. But I'm all right with that. But, you know, what it comes down to is I really have to just be in the moment, That's what I'm trying to do right now. I won't lie, for 2 days. This is crazy. For 2 days, I'll show you. Here, can you see this? Can you see this? Can you see this? Can you see this? Okay. I'm a teacher, okay? But guess what? I won't lie. I'd write all my lessons down, and you'd never see me pull a piece of paper out during the lesson. Because I believe that even in my teaching job, that God was guiding me. That as I went there, because what it would allow me to do, if I went directly by the paper, I might miss the student and what he felt and didn't see the emotion and something. I can tell when one of my students didn't want to tell me he didn't understand how to do a certain thing. I didn't have to embarrass him in front of the other kids. I could just look at him and go, okay. In my head, I go, I'll talk to him later, off to the side, and help him out. That's what happens in this fellowship. We don't embarrass each other in that. We kind of like live our life, and we can see. What a great program.
Thank you.
Who else has a question for Dan? Anyone?
Well, I guess it's my turn.
I'm sorry, you missed your chance.
I missed my chance. Anyway, thanks again, Dan. It was it's great listening to your experience, Strength and Hope. I have a question. When you were talking about your 6th and 7th step there, and you were out of the car, and you realized, was that a spiritual awakening for you, do you think?
Absolutely. I think that it was a spiritual awakening. It was, you know, but it doesn't occur. It doesn't occur unless I drop to my knees at that moment. You know, if my self-centeredness says, no, they're wrong, and I keep walking down the road, there's no get. God did not push me down. I had to push myself down. That's the only time when it really has that motion, is when I let it go and give it to God. You know, He gives me the opportunity to do it, but I don't always do it. And when I do it, when I follow, when I feel it at that moment, it's amazing. And as soon as it happens, every moment that occurred before that, I could see the truth in it. I could see how I affected other people's lives. And that's why I was able, and thank God, that I continued, you know, like I said, that the speed that I do my steps, the speed that my sponsor wanted me to do them, the speed that I do, I want to do them, and the speed that God has me do them. And when I got from that 6th and 7th up there, there was an 8 and 9 that I didn't even expect to happen again. I thought it was complete. I thought I'd done a hell of a good job on 8 and 9, at least what I felt. But that moment was going to occur, and it only came again as I followed God's pattern. Thanks.
Just to follow up on that, so when you had this spiritual awakening and you got the realization of some of your past actions, how did that carry over to the future of your program?
Well, I can tell you right now, you can't go back in the past and change those things at that moment. But what it did is it let me look at the truth, and it let me see people in a different light. You know, I guess I was looking earlier today, I was looking at instead of character defects, the character assets. And I noticed that the list was a lot smaller. I was like, wow, hold it. This is kind of, I'm a little disappointed that we can't find a bunch of more assets than that. But the assets that were there, you know, caring for another person. Wow. That means, you know, when you grow up the way I did, and you people were only pawns to me, you go from there to caring about you, about the things that go in your heart. When you talk, I feel your heart, your soul touch my soul. I mean, that's what changes as I continue. And with that, I don't have to worry that the character defects, by stopping and having to go, wow, you're being self-centered. What usually happens is, and I don't know about you, but at least for me, I start getting a self-centered or crazy man act in my head when I'm driving down a road or doing something different like that. And before I can, even act on it, this little thought comes in and says, is that your best plan? And then every once in a while, I look up to him and say, can you let me be pissed off a little bit longer? You know, can I be angry a little longer? And he's like, no, this is not the way you want to live. If you want to live that way, you can. It is your choice how you want to live. I don't want to live that way today. I have a wonderful family and a wonderful life. And I'm just grateful that I have you guys. Thanks.
Anyone else for Dan?
Hi, I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Helen.
Hey, Helen.
Really, really enjoyed listening to you tonight. But the one word you never mentioned, which is in step 7, is that word humbly. And could you elaborate a little bit what you think humility is today?
Well, the first thing is I always talk about it. It's amazing. You ever notice that, like, when something opens up during a period of that, like I said, that moment where I think that was a level of humbleness for myself to go to my hands and knees and look up to God. But that wasn't like what was going to open it up there. I can remember not really understanding the humility and humbleness to a certain level. And so God always likes to put me in the right place. So I go out to the Phoenix group and they're having a meeting on a Saturday morning outside. And it's July 9th. And they hand me the book. I say, hey, why don't you read the Daily Reflection? I'm like, oh, really? Okay, I'll do it. So I'm sitting there and it's in my little chair. I'm just relaxed. And what I read that day was one of the things that helped me understand. Because see, one of my biggest character defects is the fact that I can't allow you to say something nice about me. That I can remember people come up to me, when you're a teacher, this or that, or you're helping somebody in the program, they'll come to you, oh man, what a great guy you are. You're doing this and this and this and this and this and this. And then I look at them and go, don't you know me? Don't you know who I am? Don't you know the things I've done? Don't you know the people I've hurt? And if you knew who I was, you would not say that about me. That's how I felt. Even if the words didn't come out of my mouth, I felt that way in there. I couldn't accept a compliment. I couldn't accept that, even if it was something I did, it was good. And so what happened is, I read that reading that day, and it said, all you have to do is say thank you. When somebody says something nice about you, say thank you. And as you say thank you, thank God in your heart and your soul. And that's how simple it was for me. You know, those kind of things, that humility and that humbleness that they talk about on that July 9th, is I did not understand it. If I don't go to that meeting that day, I had other plans. I wasn't going to go there. Something told me I needed to be there. I follow those for something that feels today. You know, something I feel, I got to go. You know, I've talked about different things that have happened. I talked about the fact that recently, I think it was a little more than 2 years ago, I'm at that same thing. They're having a picnic. And God says to me, well, during the meeting, during the lead, he says, go visit your mom's grave in New Hampshire. I'm like, looking around, like, what would you want me to do that for? My wife's coming in, and she's got another hour. She's going to be back in town. You know what I said to God? Okay. I called my wife up. She was on her way home. She was getting done with the job, and we were going to go. We jumped in the car, and we drove to New Hampshire. I thought it was about my mother's grave. It was about, on the way there, I contacted my cousin, who somehow I hadn't seen in years, and I reopened an entire part of my family that wouldn't have occurred if I wouldn't have listened to the message that God was having for me at that moment. those things happen in our lives all the time. Does it mean we always hear them? No. But when I do hear them, you know, here it is 2 years later, we talk all the time. We go up and visit them. They were gone out of my life. I thought it was about going to my mother's grave and found out it was about the opening of a new part of my life. Those are the kind of things that happen if you don't pick up that first trick. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. So next week, we certainly want to make sure that we are back.